So in preparation for this episode, while I was watching the movie that we'll be discussing later, we stopped halfway through and decided to get some beer.
Yes, because it was that kind of movie.
Yes, and
We're a little
drunk right now.
I mean, when we say late night, we mean a late night of drinking.
Yes, we
always said we'd do one of these podcasts a little drunk.
Yeah.
And we did.
We're doing definitely. It. Definitely. I'm drinking a Bigfoot Ale. It's going to be awesome. Hey! Welcome to Late Night at the Movie Emporium. I am your host, Eli J. Osman.
And I'm Andrew Mead Ford, his co-host. And that was Gay Witch Abortion.
With the song Action Cop. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Let's say the
deed and yes.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
Okay, that's enough.
All right. Well now.
As I said at the opening, we had a few beers.
A few meaning three.
Yes, which doesn't mean a lot. We might make us lightweights, but we're drinking this, it's called Bigfoot Ale.
By Sierra Nevada. We're going to shamelessly plug their product because their product is shameless.
Well, we got it because I had a picture, because it's Bigfoot. It was called Bigfoot Ale, and it had a picture of Bigfoot.
And it says barley wine.
I love Sassy so much that I will bear his or her children if I have to.
You call Bigfoot Sassy?
Yes, I do. Sasquatch, Sassy.
No, I get, but Sassy is a
Sassy word. Is a sassy broad. That's all I'm saying.
He's wearing a leather jacket and no shirt underneath right now.
It's a vinyl jacket.
Vinyl, whatever.
From Kmart.
You have to hand wash it, don't you?
Yes.
With a damp cloth, don't you?
But yeah, and yeah. Bigfoot Ale is has 9.6% alcohol in it, which is double the amount of normal beer, which is like what, 5?
I think the Sam Adams we got was 5.5, and it was delish.
Then
this was this is a little rougher, but it's definitely.
It's a beast of an ale.
They actually, yeah, it's a, you know, not false advertising. It is a beast of an ale.
Yes.
It has 2009 on the, you know, it's 2009 Bigfoot Ale, so you don't forget what year it is.
Okay, so this past week was our spring break. Woo! Spring break! Woo!
We went nowhere.
Yeah, I went to my hometown of West Union, Ohio. Woo! And worked at my job there and did nothing. Do you know what I did?
What'd you
watched do? The complete series of The Norm MacDonald Show. The Norm Show. or Norm as it became later, which is amazing, hilarious show. And then I watched the complete first season of Herman's Head. I'm the only person to watch these shows since they originally aired, I'm pretty sure.
And I stayed in Athens, Ohio, and I watched many, many films. We were going to do a podcast on three horror films that went direct to DVD, which we'll do eventually.
Yeah, I haven't got a chance to watch those yet, so.
Yeah, but I watched all three of them, and I won't talk about them.
No, we'll save that for the next
one. We'll save that for the next one, but there's one that stands out, and there's two that are both very
I did watch Quantum of Solace with my dad last night.
Yes.
Like 2 in the morning.
Quantum of Solace is incredibly fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, it was great. It's probably my favorite Bond movie.
I don't know if it's like... See, to me, like, it's good, but you can't watch it if you haven't seen Casino Royale. You have to have that.
But it's probably the most, like, non-Bond movie of all the Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's so different from the rest of them that it's almost unfair to compare them to the other ones.
It's
like comparing apple to oranges or
jet-powered oranges to jet-powered apples.
No, the jet-powered oranges to poison dart-throwing apples.
Right. All right. We're drunk. we're all right, I guess.
I
watched a bunch of stuff.
Herman's Head. I don't know if Herman's Head was a... It's normally a big show because it stars Hank Azaria and Yardley Smith from The Simpsons.
Yeah, I know Yardley Smith.
Yeah, and it's pretty good. It's all and also stars that main guy, I forget his name, but the main guy from Fright Night and
Roddy McDowall.
No, the kid, and he's from Fright Night. And he's also from Mannequin 2. I forget his name, but it's...
Am I supposed to recognize him from Mannequin 2? No, you are.
Okay.
You are the only one.
Well, I forget his name, but it stars him, and the show is all about these four personalities that live inside Herman's head. It's like, there's a smart one, there's a sensitive one, there's the lust, and then there's the worried one, and there are these four people that live inside his brain. It's basically just a normal... like a sitcom.
Yeah.
But since it's early Fox, it's very, like, almost every episode deals with sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny sometimes when, you know, dealing with sex that much, but that's how Fox used to be.
Yeah.
Yardley Smith is a virgin in it.
Really?
Yeah, her character
is. Good for her character.
And she's, like, 3'2" in real life.
Wow, that's short.
Oh, she's taller than that, but she's a short gal.
Over spring break, I just spent watching a bunch of movies. I was supposed to be writing and doing some work, but I didn't. I went to see Knowing and Duplicity and I Love You Man. All three came out last weekend.
Yeah, I also seen I Love You Man.
And you saw I Love You Man as well, and I Love You Man was
a lot of fun. Yeah, yeah, I really liked it.
That was a really fun movie. Knowing was very interesting.
I won't talk about it too much. He talked about I Love You Man masturbating with condoms.
Yes.
I've done that before. It is awesome.
We're drunk.
Okay. But I'm saying, I've done it before. It is nice. I agree with that. But, I mean, it's a very expensive masturbation habit.
Condoms are expensive.
They cost money.
That's the only thing I really contribute to this particular aspect of the conversation. They are expensive.
Yes, they are. It's
like $1.85 for three of them.
Even if I didn't have any alcohol in my system, I would still make that comment.
Well, it's a valid comment. I know you. Yeah. And I'm, you know...
We all do it.
Mom, Why Dad, I'm sorry. No.
Oh, yeah, your parents are listening
My parents might listen to this, you fuck.
My parents don't know how the internet works.
My dad's like, you know, my parents will listen to this, maybe. You know, I don't know.
I
will say is that condoms are expensive. That's all I'm going to say.
Andrew, how would you know that?
They'll probably be like, good for you, you know? Good for you.
Safe sex.
You're practicing safe sex. I'm not going to get the AIDS.
It's true.
You know?
But I did watch this awesome Australian musical superhero comedy. Directed.
You didn't finish it, you bastard.
I never finished it, but I started to watch it. And then I got too busy watching other stuff. And it was it's called The Return of Captain Invincible. It stars Alan Arkin and Christopher Lee. Mm-hmm. And it's directed by the guy who directed
Howling 2 and Howling 3.
And Mad Dog Morgan.
And Mad Dog
which
Morgan.
Which we talked about on the previous episode.
His name is Philippe Mora.
Yeah, and it was really good. It reminded me a lot of like The Incredibles. It reminded me a lot of Hancock, and it was
and
pretty
Watchmen.
Good.
You said they took one thing for under the hood.
Oh yeah, yeah. The opening they had like this fake.
This fake documentary.
Yeah, this fake news clip, like theatrical news clip, and they had like the superheroes in front of HUAC.
Yeah, and they do that in Under the Hood, but I think that's in the Well, the movie came out after the Watchmen graphic novel. I think the movie was late 80s, wasn't it, or was it early 80s?
It was 84, 85 on the movie. It was
around the same time of the Watchmen comic. I don't know.
I don't know.
I went to see Watchmen again on Friday night, and it was better the second time.
Hmm.
I will say that. And I also, after that, I saw Under the Hood, and Under the Hood was really, really good. Really interesting. And Tales of the Black Freighter was, you know, cool, I guess. I mean, I don't really know how it'll cut into a director's cut of the movie, but,
Well, they have to cut in the parts where the kid read the comic.
Yeah, and they have the shot too. Like they had those there. They have to cut that in, and they have to cut in the comic.
I went to Half Price Books. It's a small chain with and it's really good, like cheap books and stuff. You can trade in stuff, and they have an outlet place of that type of stuff, which is hard to find, like outlet. Like video stores and stuff like that, but they had for $15 all the seasons of SCTV that's been released on DVD.
And so you got the third.
Yeah,
volume.
I had the first two already, so I got the third one, which I've been watching that all throughout the spring break, and it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I think SCTV is funnier than Saturday Night has ever been.
Well, it's quite possible because SCTV didn't have the same, like, SCTV didn't have to air, like, weekly, like, SNL, and it didn't have to fill 90 minutes like that.
Well, they had to fill 90 minutes.
Yeah, but not as often.
They had even more. They had to do, like, they had to come up with different ideas. They had to do, like, in a lot of their sets and scenes, or like seem like they have a lot of production value and all this stuff. And
right.
Well, you said they had a lot of crew and stuff.
Well, yeah, they have production value because they spent the time writing them. Like SNL would have to like start on Monday writing for Saturday. Like,
but it.
Well, I'm not defending SNL. I'm not saying SNL's better because it had shorter time. Like SNL,
I know.
It can suck really bad.
It's sketch comedy that came out around the same time.
Yeah. No, it is, and I mean it's definitely comparable. It's just. There's certain things.
SCTV started out Second City, which is a live stage performance, and they've been doing that since the 50s with Alan Alda and Alan Arkin and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that like it isn't better than
they've been doing that for years, and their break the TV was like, hey, why should we do a live sketch comedy show when we already do that? Let's make good.
Well, because SNL is definitely, like... I mean, if you look at old episodes, they're like, incredible... Like, I've watched the complete first two seasons, which are... they're incredibly long, for one.
Well, a lot of the original Saturday Night Live people were... A lot of them have been Second City.
Right.
I know, like, Chris Farley's been... John Belushi has been. Gilda Radner. Dan Aykroyd.
Well, what I'm saying... Well, I mean, I don't really want to talk too much about... SNL and SCTV because I haven't seen a whole. I've seen a couple of clips from SCTV.
John Belushi was trying to get John Candy to join Saturday Night Live when Saturday Night Live first started.
But basically, the way I come down on both of those is like SCTV. They had more time and they went down. They were more focused on writing quality sketches, and SNL was more focused on getting out product to fill a time slot.
Yeah,
and you know, which there's the difference right there. That's why SCTV is probably funnier.
Yeah, then plus like all the early Saturday Night Live I watched, like I didn't get a lot of the jokes because I wasn't because I don't know
you
much about
there. Yeah,
yeah, I don't know much about late 1970s New York politics, which
like country politics, like New York politics.
Yeah,
and
it
like
was,
pop culture. Like,
yeah, it was
what
so
was hip
like
in
you
1970s.
Can tell. Saturday Night Live was made by New Yorkers because you had to be from New York to get a lot of that stuff.
Well, there's the one. I think it's the second season. There's the Paul Simon. There's a Paul Simon episode. It's basically a Paul Simon special where he plays like five songs, and then there's one sketch he does where Paul Simon is Billy Jack. and it's like, who the fuck is Billy Jack? Like, I am, like, watching this,
You know who Billy Jack was? Losers, man.
If say you buy the second season of SNL on DVD because you like... You like signing, like, if someone just, like, randomly buys it, they're gonna see a Billy Jack sketch and they're gonna be like, who the fuck is Billy Jack?
Well,
like,
Billy Jack's actually pretty famous.
I have an idea of Billy Jack, but I've never seen anything with Billy Jack. I've never heard people talk about Billy Jack.
Really? I'm actually quite surprised.
Nathan Rabin wrote about Billy Jack Goes to Washington for Movies That Time Forgot. He wrote about Billy Jack Goes to Washington. That's the only time I've heard about Billy Jack ever.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I've seen all the Billy Jacks. Billy Jack's isn't really Southern.
Well, because there's a phrase. You know, it's
Born
like,
Losers is pretty good. That's the first one. And it started as just a biker movie, and it branched out. But, I mean, with SCTV, it's just like, I get a lot of their jokes far more. Like, they did one sketch. It was like, last episode I watched was all about, like, making fun of One from the Heart. The Coppola movie, Coppola was reshooting it as like a 3D monster movie. It was called 3D Steak of the Heart.
But the sets like looked exactly the same.
Yeah, they did, but you can tell just like a matte painting, but it still looked like you can tell there was parodying it, and it looked pretty good, and they had a way smaller budget than Saturday Night Live,
right? Or SCTV?
No, they had a way smaller budget than Saturday Night Live had.
No, I mean, I thought you were talking about to make it look like One from the Heart on SCTV. They had a smaller budget than One from the Heart did.
Yeah.
Is what I thought you were saying.
Oh, yeah, but they did have a smaller budget than, like...
SNL, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, they also had
fewer shows to do.
They're making fun of, like, Bergman film, like, there's a lot of really funny jokes. They make fun of Michael McDonald doing backup singing.
Yeah.
Which
is always funny.
Yeah, and it's... It's just a great, great show. I suggest everyone go out there and watch it. Take a look at it.
Yeah. I don't want to, the best movie I saw over spring break, I'll talk about in the horror movie thing. It's the movie Martyrs, which we will discuss once I get him to sit down and watch it. Which, I mean, I don't want to build it up too much because you, like...
You
I
have
wanna,
been.
I know
you're
I have
just
been.
Like, you're just like, if Jesus only preferred one movie, it would be Martyrs.
I didn't say that. Jesus would probably not like Martyrs.
I don't know, man.
I don't think he would have.
I don't know, but you're like talking like it's the greatest movie ever made.
Well, I don't...
I'm not going to say anything about it.
It's not like the greatest movie ever made, but it's very...
I was home for the weekend, so I couldn't watch this. The only TV in the house I could watch that on was like the one in the family room.
Yeah.
And my mom was always in there watching The View or something that she DVR'd.
Yeah, your mom DVRs The View.
I don't know. My dad doesn't like it either, but...
It's kind of weird. No, I'm not judging. If you
look on the DVR list, there's The View and a few westerns that I DVR off Encore Westerns.
I mean, my mom records, like, a soap opera, so, like, not just... I forget which one. It's either Days
which,
of My Life.
Which, every once in a while on The View, there is some interesting stuff, like, when they have some cool guests.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a Live with Regis and Kelly. Like, they'll have a good guest every once in a while.
Yeah, and they do some weird skits and stuff every once in a while on there, too.
Well, Whoopi's on there now,
Whoopi, yeah, and she was in Theodore Rex.
Everybody loves Whoopi. Fuck Theodore Rex!
Okay, that's enough.
Okay. Well, let's get into the pilots that we're going to talk about.
Okay.
That
are all done by this episode,
Victor Fresco.
This episode, we kind of have two topics. We're going to talk about a new pilot that came out, or a new TV show that's on TV right now. We're going to talk about just the pilot episode, and then we're going to talk about a special movie that's a travesty. It's not on DVD, and the world needs to see this.
Let's act like it's a secret, even though it's going to be the title of the episode. Let's just act like it's a total top secret. Like it's a secret special movie. But the pilots we're going to talk about are by a television creator named Victor Fresco, who has done three. He's had three really. He's had three pilots total.
He's had more pilots, but he's had
three pilots air.
Yeah, but he has three TV shows. Andy Richter Controls the Universe, Life on a Stick, and the new show Better Off Ted.
And
it's on ABC.
We watched the Better Off Ted pilot when it came on before Lost. And earlier tonight we watched the Andy Richter pilot, and we watched the Life on a Stick.
Well, pilot. I've seen all those before.
You've seen those two before. And
the complete series, because they're on my computer, and I've watched them several times.
And, I mean, they're all... I mean, I guess, should we talk about, like, how similar... Like, there are a lot of similarities, but mostly between Andy Richter and Better Off Ted, because they're both office-based sitcoms.
Okay. First off, let's give a good synopsis of this new show. Better Off Ted, which, if you ever turn on ABC, you've seen trailers for it, because...
You can't blame them for not advertising it. Yeah,
ABC advertised the hell out of the show, to the point that it's almost annoying, I want to see Castle, and then... But I almost didn't want to after all the ads I saw, which is like...
Yeah.
Just like, Castle. Yeah. Castle. Nathan Fillion in Castle.
Yeah. And, like, Better Off Ted, like, the pilot episode was all the promos. Like, they would literally just... The entire pilot episode was the promo. Like, there's nothing other than that. Like, it's just... You know, if you've seen the promo, you've pretty much seen the pilot episode. So it was pretty, Not that really took... I mean, there's still, like, little things in the pilot episode, but, like, the general plot is revealed in the promo. What are you getting, Eli?
Beer?
Eli's getting another beer. It looks like a Sam Adams.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to go ahead and say it. The movie we're going to review later, we paused to go get beer. Did you already say that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I think so. I don't know.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. Okay, well, the pilot, Better Off Ted, it's pretty much all about this office guy, which is, I forget the name of the actor, but he was a star of the U.S. version of Coupling.
I saw an episode of that.
I was watching it.
Yeah, when you were watching it.
Yeah, and it's...
Proof again, you'll watch any sitcom.
And it's all about this crazy, insane, like, company that kind of does, like, everything. It's kind of like a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, they kind of do genetic engineering.
And it's kind of all that type of stuff. And they do, like, weird experiments and stuff and try to be, like, I guess it's, like, a big consumer company. I don't know what type of company it is.
Well, it has
that one chick from...
Arrested Development,
and Ally McBeal, who's married to Ellen DeGeneres.
Portia de Rossi.
Yes. Yes, I knew her name sounded like a Canadian high school drama. Degrassi.
Oh, I didn't get it. I know I did.
There's like four or five Degrassi shows.
Really?
Yeah, there's Degrassi... Then there's, or is it Degrassi? I don't know. Whatever. Well, it's Degrassi Junior High, Durosky High School, Durosky The Next Generation.
You're saying Durosky.
I don't know. I don't fucking speak Canadian.
You're drunk. You're slurring your words. You sound like an asshole.
But I always slur my words.
Do you know how you sound?
But
you sound
I always
horrible.
Slur my words and mispronounce stuff. How is that anything new?
You sound so drunk. No, probably more drunk. This Bigfoot Ale is retarded. Better Off Ted. Yeah, it's really. There's two episodes of it now. We watched them both. They're both really good, and
yeah,
they're really
it's
funny.
It's very different humor for a sitcom.
Yeah,
and this Victor Fresco has actually a lot of a sitcom have this humor, and it's really different. It's more of a it's almost like a dry, witty.
Mm-hmm.
Humor, but at the same time, kind of juvenile in a way.
We come here tonight to praise Victor Fresco.
Yeah, and okay, well, his first big show was Andy Richter Controls the Universe.
Which is great, and also...
And they finally stoned DVD, right when the Better Off Ted came out.
Well, the most interesting thing about Andy Richter Controls the Universe is that Matthew Weiner is one of the executive producers on the show, or was, and he went on to create Mad Men and write for The Sopranos. And I think that is, like, fascinating that he worked on Andy Richter Controls the Universe. Like, that gives the show a level of, like, you know, credence that it didn't really have until I realized that. Like, the guy who does Mad Men worked on Andy Richter. Like, Andy Richter's got to be amazing. So I'm going to go back. I've seen the pilot now.
I'm blanking on what channel Andy Richter was on.
It was on Fox. No, it was on Fox because he in the interview he did on AV Club, they talked about.
I thought it was Fox. I know Life on a Stick was.
No,
Fox.
It was definitely. Yeah, they're all Fox. And then Better Off Ted is ABC. So hopefully it sticks.
Okay.
Hopefully
the reason we're talking about a lot of his pilots is because they're so similar to the point where Better Off Ted, pretty much is Andy Richter without Andy Richter.
Well, it's Andy Richter with a. I don't want to say more appealing lead character, but like a more interesting. I don't know. I find him more interesting than Andy Richter. And Andy Richter's also got in Andy Richter Controls the Universe. He's got that. He's talking to the dead founder of the company and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a little surreal, and it's something that like is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But then Better Off Ted is like it's designed to be accessible by like the mass
market. Even where the second episode is kind of like. Andy Richter and Controls the Universe was too crazy and too broad.
It is really weird.
And it was too, like, out there. So they decided to have, like, this more, like, condensed version of that. More of a diluted version of Andy Richter. It's Andy Richter with the haunted diluted Stillwater mixed in with it.
Well, Better Off Ted to me, well, I don't think it's, I wouldn't call it that. Like, not to like down, not to say it's like a bad show or anything. Like, it's still a really good show.
No, but I'm saying, but it's definitely made to cater.
It's tamer, and it's definitely made to cater more to the masses. It's definitely, like, I feel like he's made every concession possible to the network, and he's really trying to just get something to stick. Even to the point where the second episode is recapping things from the first episode, like, flashes back to the first episode. And explains things that happened in the first episode that reoccur in the second episode. Like, the one guy, after he gets frozen.
And then they explain again,
like, in Better Off Ted, like, this happens in the first episode, that's why he does this in this episode. Like, they're trying really hard to get the pickup viewers and, like, educate them on, like, what the show's about and,
but,
like, keep everybody up to date. But
surprisingly, Andy Richter Controlling the Universe lasts for 2 seasons.
Well, that's there, a there were longest abbreviated
running,
seasons.
That's
though.
The longest running of all three of his shows.
Right.
I mean, granted, Better Off Ted's still on, but I don't see it lasting. I really don't.
I'm optimistic. I think, well, if they'll get something like Pushing Daisies 2 seasons, even though it never really had good ratings, and they pushed the hell
but
out of
that,
too.
But it got good critic reviews.
It's not getting, like, rave reviews or anything, but it's getting, like, people like it. Yeah. And it's gotten good. What critical reviews I've seen have been, like, positive. Like, people like the show. Like,
but,
it's a good show.
Okay, let's talk about what Andy Richter's about. Andy Richter's about pretty much. Andy Richter's this. He's a wannabe writer, and he's working for this crazy company where he writes manuals for all sorts of things.
And his boss is Paget Brewster, who I love because she was in Huff, and she's great in Huff. I love Huff. I haven't seen the second season, but I love it.
I heard the second season is horrible.
First season's...
I haven't got to see it.
But anyway, yeah, like...
And it's just really about him working with this company, and it's mostly about his friends.
Right, and he has these kind
How
of...
How Better Off Ted's mostly about the company.
Well, and Andy Richter, he also has these surreal flights of fancy, and, like, he'll have, like... Like,
kind of like these
the pilot,
weird fantasy sequences.
Yeah.
Like
pilot,
on
like,
Scrubs.
I couldn't tell
like
when
on
it was
Scrubs.
A
fan- But
no, more.
Yeah, like, I think it's better than I think it's done better than Scrubs. To tell the truth.
Well, Scrubs, I can tell when it's a fantasy sequence and when it's reality. In Andy Richter, I almost can't.
Yeah, I like that feeling more. I like it more. I don't know. And it's
see, just, that's the thing. Like, I think it's kind of a like they're very similar, but the reason Scrubs has lasted longer, I think, is because there was a clear delineation between reality and fantasy.
Yeah.
And Andy Richter, at least the pilot, from what I saw, it really blurs it to the point where it's almost kind of disorienting, which I mean, that doesn't make me hate the show. Like, it was really funny, and it was really good. It was a really good pilot, but it's something like, I can see that turning people
with
off.
With Andrew, he's kind of judging it by the pilot, which I think
it's... I haven't seen the rest of the episode, which I think
that's what the studios have to do. That's what the audience does, is judge it by this pilot alone. And since we actually... Since I actually posted it on there, our own. So we always have a love for pilots. Definitely I do, because we had this.
Don't just be like this dude doesn't like pilots. I'm not saying I don't love the pilot.
That's why I came up with the idea for Automated Pilot.
Right.
Is because I just love like every episode being a pilot to a new TV show.
Right.
That's what
I like pilots.
And.
You're just like, this guy hates pilots.
You
like, don't listen
to
him.
I don't know.
I don't hate pilots.
Dude, I
watch
big...
a pilot and then I'm real. Like, then
well,
I'm like,
I,
okay.
Well, I'm
you
just
know.
Like a. I'm a more of a TV buff than you are. I mean, I watch far
I'm
more
not
TV.
Gonna argue
I'm more
that.
Obsessed
you
with
do,
TV.
Yeah.
I'm a TV junkie. I love anything that's pretty much a sitcom.
Right. But I'm not like, you know, I like to watch new, like, different pilots and, like, see, like, you know. And I'm really interested, especially in pilots that got canceled that are allegedly really great.
Oh, speaking of weird
like,
pilots,
really,
like
canceled, you know, like all that
speaking
stuff
of weird
show.
Pilots, I read about this one. I completely forget the name of it, but it stars Rutger Hauer, and it's a modern version of Hamlet, done in Detroit's Motor City.
From when was it made?
I think it was, I don't know if it's actually made yet, but I read about it. It was supposed to be for last TV season.
Huh. That sounds interesting. Like, Rucker Hauer doing TV just sounds weird. It's like when Harvey Keitel is on Life on Mars. It's like, really?
You know? Yeah. And that got canceled. My dad was upset. I was upset. I actually kind of look forward to watching Life on Mars.
What were you more upset over? Canceling Life on Mars or canceling My Own Worst Enemy? Or canceling Pushing Daisies? Of the three, which was your most?
Probably My Own Worst Enemy, because I was starting to really like that show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was starting to really, really like that show, and I was getting really into it, and I really liked the whole idea of it after a while. Life on Mars, like, I knew it lasted longer than the original version. The original version was a short version. I know that the idea for Life on Mars couldn't last for so long.
Right. Well, like, with My Own Worst Enemy, they burnt off the rest of the episodes on...
No, they aired them all. It was only 9 episodes.
Yeah, they did air them all. Well, isn't it 13 on the DVD?
No, it's only 9.
I thought it was 13.
They only made 9.
Like Harsh Realm.
They never got to finish shooting the rest. And, Pushing Daisies, I was really upset on, but I knew it was coming because...
Well, there's still 3 left for Pushing Daisies. What? And there's 3 episodes.
They said it was going to, but I heard I think you're going to wait to the DVD.
Yeah, that'll help them sell the DVD 3 more
episodes.
The
reason that got canceled was because of the writer's strike.
Right, well, no, they stopped pushing it after the writer's strike. Yeah, no, I definitely...
The writer's strike completely killed it. That killed a lot of shows. A lot of shows hurt from that.
Right,
The last season of Battlestar was hurt from that. And that's why, like, some of the, like, it was kind of split up, and, like,
right.
Near the last part of Battlestar, they had a lot of those bullshit episodes that were just, like, kind of just pointless.
Well, the mutiny was a really, like, the first half of the mutiny, the first of the two mutiny episodes was incredible.
Yeah.
And then they had one more episode, and then they dropped it.
Yeah.
But... Like, the mutiny itself was something that was introduced that ultimately proved unnecessary to the final thing. Like, now that the finale is there, the mutiny was kind of irrelevant, if you really think about it. But
mutinies normally are.
But it was something that, I don't know, I like, the it was something that it could have easily been drawn out for a few more episodes.
Okay, well, we're getting way off track of the original. After Victor Fresco's pilot.
I don't know, we both love Battlestar Galactica.
But Andy Richter Controls Universe was an amazing show, and like it got canceled, and the ratings were never truly, truly horrible. The show just got screwed over by Fox.
Well, that's the thing, because in the interview he did with AV Club, he talked about being on the set of Arrested Development talking to Mitchell Hurwitz and saying, like, Mitchell Hurwitz was literally like, you know, like, if you know, we're in a position because of your show almost where they're willing to give us 3 seasons because we're that quirky show that gets really good reviews. Where if we literally we could switch places and it wouldn't matter, like, it could be your show instead of our show, and it would be like the same, like, just because of when you guys came out. Like, he told, like talking to Andy Richter, he was just like, just because of when you guys came out, that's what happened, that's the mindset they were in then. And, like, if we'd come out then, you would be the show that, like, that came out now that would still, you know, get 3 seasons to prove itself, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting, that it wasn't necessarily just that it was Fox, it was Fox, and it was that time, like, I forget, it was like 2000, 2001 when it came out?
Yeah, and I read another interview with Andy Richter, that was before the AVW one that just came out, which he would say, like, whenever someone...
You said AVW.
I did?
AV Club! Not AV... Fuck AVW. Alright, yeah, continue.
But, But like, they would, like, when people would come up to him and start talking about Andy Richter Controls the Universe, he'd always get really sad.
Yeah, I mean,
that show was always like, how they canceled and how it ended so early was such a sore
subject.
Yeah. And Andy Richter has not had good luck with TV shows. Like, his next show was at Quintuplets, which...
Well, that
was not very... I've seen it.
Good.
It was horrible. It was horrible. Then he did Andy Barker PI. He had Conan O'Brien as an executive producer, Lorne Michaels involved. It was a great show. It lasted 4 episodes.
And then they only filmed 6, right?
Yeah. I think they aired 4 of them. But if not, it was either between 2 and 4 when it got canceled.
Yeah.
And you cannot judge a show on that much episodes. You cannot.
Which,
it was a great show. It was hilarious. It was all about, like, this... Andy Richter plays this this accountant who accidentally became a PI.
Mm-hmm.
And end up like really liking that and kind of doing like sticking to accounting but doing like PI work on the side. And he had like Tony Howe from Arrested Development as his partner.
Yeah.
And he ran a video store on the same strip mall where he works, and he always wanted to help out because it was like, ooh, I get to work on a real case.
Yeah.
And then you had like this old PI who's all retired that helped out, and it had this good like. It was so weird and kind of strange, and it was so good. They even had Tracy Lords on an episode.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's, you know, I really haven't seen, I know Andy Barker PI is online where you can watch it. Like, it was online for a while on, like, whatever channel it was on, like Fox or ABC.
Yeah, it was on NBC.
ABC?
NBC.
NBC. Whatever channel it was on, they did have it online for, I think it's still online to watch, like, legally.
Yeah.
Not, like, where you download it. It's only 6 episodes total.
Yeah, they're it's come out on DVD, but but now Andy Richter's like, after he tried to make it in Hollywood and he just failed, he kind of failed.
Well, he's
going back to the Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien. So.
Which, you know, it's going to be amazing whenever he gets back in June. And speaking of, I mean, we could talk briefly about, we did last time, I think, we talked briefly about Jimmy Fallon. I mean, I don't know. I watched a little bit the other night, and it was kind of funny.
Watched that the first 2 episodes, and I haven't watched it since.
I watched it when Mike Myers was on, because I was curious, because Mike Myers made The Love Guru, and I haven't heard from him since, so I wanted to see if he, like, apologized or anything. And he didn't. And I really thought he should have. So that was, like, really not classy on Mike Myers'
But
part.
Have you watched the Austin Powers movies in a long time? They're not much different. They're really not. The jokes are the same jokes. It's really, Love Guru is no different than Austin Powers.
It's different.
That character is slightly more annoying than Austin Powers. Slightly.
It's different.
Seriously, I watched Goldmember recently, and it was not much different from
Goldmember is that much different, although I will stand by Goldmember because he was able to convince, like, Steven Spielberg to make a cameo at the beginning. So I'm going to, like, you know, if he convinced Spielberg to get in it, maybe, like, you know. I don't remember loving it, but I was just like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, they had a big director cameo.
What? No, yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
Beverly Hills 3 must be the greatest movie ever made because it has a cameo by George Lucas in it.
Into the Night has, like, so many directors in it, like, that cameo. And I think Innocent Blood, like, John Landis has a couple of movies, I think, where there's, like, just a shit ton of directors just show up. No, I'm just, like, I don't remember Goldmember that well. We also had Michael Caine play a role in it, too.
Oh, yeah, I did like that part.
That's pretty cool. Like,
okay, well,
and the first one, like,
well,
yeah.
Way, no one cares about Austin Powers.
No.
I don't, because that's not 1998.
But basically, I will never forgive Mike Myers for Love Guru, and that's just...
I never really cared enough about Michael Myers, to be honest. You know, I read Jay Maher's book all about Saturday Night Live, and Jay Maher was real upset because the second year he was on Saturday Night Live, they moved him to this, like, his first year, he had this pretty good size dressing room. And the second year, his dressing room was an old elevator.
Because?
That wasn't working anymore.
Because?
And, yeah, and he was, and that was Jay Maher's, like, dressing room, and he was kind of upset by that. And then he talked to Mike Myers about it, and Mike Myers is like, for the first 2 or 3 years I was here, I didn't even have a dressing room. Like, he did all of his writing and stuff. In the hallway.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like, horror stories about SNL, I guess, from, like, earlier on, and, like,
yeah,
I guess,
I suggest that, Jay Maher wrote this memoir all about his 2 years of Saturday Night Live. I suggest you go out there and get it. It's pretty hilarious. He doesn't, like, he talks about how much of an asshole Rob Schneider is, and how he almost got in a fight with him, a fist fight.
Well, I mean, I mean, everybody, like, who's heard the Roger Ebert, Rob Schneider back and forth can kind of, like,
yeah.
Deduce.
He talks about like these awesome he has tons of hilarious Norm Macdonald stories. He has this really awesome story where he used to wrestle in high school, and so did Chris Farley. So they actually have a wrestling match. And they end up breaking stuff and all over the place. And then he talked about how he was on the same cast as McKean.
Michael McKean?
Yeah. And like, they used to talk about how they used to hang on afterwards, and they would never mention Saturday Night Live because they both hated it with a passion.
Well, I feel like like all the stories about SNL were like, there, you know, there's all these rivalries like with, between like Bill Murray, like Bill Murray and Chevy Chase never got along, and like,
Chevy Chase was an asshole,
yeah,
and Bill Murray is too,
yeah, but they, like they were both kind of assholes, and then like everybody, like, and then like, you know, like Jay Moore had to, like, his dressing room was an elevator, Mike Myers didn't have a dressing, like, I feel like now, like, probably everybody has their own dressing room and off, like, you know, and everything, and that's why it sucks. Like, now, I feel like I feel like that could be.
They still have problems, and like what he talked about in the book was, he says back in the '70s, like the way they do the writing and style and all that stuff, mm-hmm. was drugs.
Yeah,
and that's how they do all their writing on a, like, on a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they do all their writing.
Well, they do a bunch of coke and stay up.
All night. And write all that. That system still exists today, but they don't do drugs anymore. That's why Saturday Night Live isn't good anymore, is because they have this style, because they have the structure of how they set up doing their shows.
Yeah.
That just does not...
Doesn't apply with
that. Yeah, it doesn't work anymore. I'm like, you don't have the drugs, and you're not doing drugs anymore to stay up this late to do this work. You need to give yourself more time. Like he talked about, he showed up to work one day on his first day of working, And they're like, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here for 5 more hours. And he, like, showed up, like, noon or something.
Yeah, and it's like, what are you...
And he's like, why can't we start now?
Yeah.
But it's...
It's SNL...
It's a joke. I think now it's just as funny as Mad TV is. And Mad TV's fucking horrible.
And Mad TV got canceled. I mean, I guess they'll never cancel... I don't know. I can't say that. Well, I don't think they'll ever cancel SNL just because it's...
Chris Elliott's daughter's on it now.
Which one is she?
She's younger than me.
Really?
She's 21.
Wow. She's older than me.
That shows how old you are.
You're older than me.
Yeah. But,
Well,
yeah.
We never talked about Life on a Stick.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We need to talk about that.
Life on a Stick is like...
Oh, yeah.
Life on a Stick.
Oh, crap. We're
really far.
We're 41 minutes, and we haven't even talked about our movie yet.
Well, all we can say about
All
we can say about the movie is that it is fucking amazing.
Okay, well, anyway, back to the Victor Fresco. Okay,
Life on a Stick is a really good show.
The other show he did was in 2005.
Which, again, I've only seen the pilot for
this. It was called Life on a Stick, and it was all about these
guys who work at a hot dog stand.
Yeah, these two guys who just graduated from college. Just graduated from high school. They're not going to college.
Yeah.
They're just walking. They're just working in this fast food restaurant.
They're just walking.
They're just
and at the mall. And yeah. Then this manager is an asshole.
Yeah, and it's about them and the family and their friends. And the show lasted for... they made 13 episodes. Mm-hmm. It got canceled after 5.
It also featured Amy Yasbeck, who you may know from Problem Child and The Mask. Oh, was she in Problem Child 2 or Problem Child... Or was she in both all of them?
She was in both.
Okay. And The Mask.
No. She plays two roles in the second one. Well, she was actually married to John Ritter.
Oh, okay. Was she married to him when he died?
Yeah, she's also in Wings, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They had a couple kids together.
Condolences. I guess I never realized that.
I was always a big John Ritter fan. And it also, it also stars that redhead, which is in Twilight.
What? Who?
The redhead girl?
That girl's in Twilight?
Yeah.
I saw that movie.
Yeah.
I didn't pay for it.
I watched some of it. Yeah, I downloaded it off the computer. I didn't pay money.
I watched it streaming
online. That scene when that freaky, ugly-looking main dude, that dreamy, whatever, Edward, whatever they're talking about.
Edward
yeah,
Cullen.
Which I think
his name's Edward Cullen.
I think he's an ugly man. But anyway, and that
how dare you?
And that Christian Stewart girl, and they're like running through the woods. I saw that at Walmart, and I started cracking up.
It looks laughing. Ridiculous.
It looks retarded. And then he's like, "You want to see how I look like in the sunlight?" And he walks into the sun. He starts twinkling like diamonds.
Which, by the way,
that's a horrible effect too. It looks like they've done that on their Windows Media like
Windows Movie Maker. Yeah. By the way, I think I really like Kristen Stewart. I think she's really
good
actress. She's in Into the Wild. She's in Adventureland, which is coming out, and she was in Panic Room, which, like, you know, that was like a while ago, and Panic Room's not a very good movie, but she's a really interesting
actress. Okay, well, back to Life on a Stick.
Back to Life on a Stick.
Okay, and Life on a Stick, yeah, and I watched this complete series. I've watched it several times. I don't know why I really like it. See, what's different about this show is, like, he kind of went away from all, like, the surreal, like, daydreams and stuff like that.
He still has one specific element, which is the coworker who, like, it's literally directly from Andy Richter. He says, that's, he's like, my Wendy? Are you, you had sex with my Wendy?
Yeah.
Talking to his coworker, and then he says, you mean my, I forget their name in Life on a Stick.
Yeah, I did.
But he calls her my, you know, my, what's
Lily.
Her face? Like, my Lily. Yeah, my Lily.
Her name was
like,
Lily,
I have to defend my Lily. Like, he talks to his boss. You can't talk to my Lily like that.
They have
like
a lot
that.
Of same jokes.
Like, that's similar. And then,
they also have a lot of the same type of humor. Like, this one is just witty by, like, the way they talk and the way
they,
like,
this one had a laugh track. I don't think Andy Richter had a laugh track.
No, this is a live studio audience.
Yeah.
Well, Andy Richter was a single camera. This was a multi-camera sitcom.
I knew there was something different.
Multi-camera sitcoms are always done from the studio audience.
Right. So it was a little different, yeah.
MASH had a laugh track. This has a studio audience.
Right. MASH didn't have a laugh track the whole time.
There was a few episodes it didn't.
I thought it dropped it after like a few seasons.
Nope. Had it till the end.
Okay.
It was just a few episodes they got rid of it, and on the British version didn't have it at all.
Oh well. But yeah, Life on a Stick was pretty decent, and it got canceled, and probably I mean, judging from the pilot, I don't really know where all he could take the show. Like if it's not gonna say anything grand, it's just too like.
Well, it's just your basic like.
No, it's just a basic sitcom,
that's it. It was kind of like about teenagers and that sort of thing. Because this is on Fox, and their biggest show at the time, their sitcom wise, was that 70s show.
It is very similar.
It's
to
very
that.
Similar to that 70s show. I think it's funnier than that 70s show because. I don't know. I like his type of humor.
No, I do. I love Victor Fresco's type of humor. I don't know. Like, that 70s show is like, I've seen so much of that I can't really speak against it, you know? And especially based on just the pilot from the other show, I can't say that it's better than that 70s show.
Oh, God. I have to pee really bad. I'm going to pause this.
All right. We'll see you guys in a few. Worst podcast ever.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry. I have a lot of beer in me. I have to pee.
Well, you know what? You know why we got the beer? Because we were watching.
Okay. Life on a Stick. I think Life on a Stick is a pretty decent show. It gets funny as it goes on. It has an episode with Ruben Studdard in it.
What?
Yeah. Sorry. 2009 or 2004.
2004. Well, Ruben Studdard was really good in Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed.
Okay, well, yeah. Well, he's a... Well, yeah. Well, the show's pretty good. Life on a Stick, I think you can find it on YouTube.
Probably.
If not, just you can probably download a torrent of it or something like that. I suggest you go out there and just...
It's not on DVD, so...
Oh, no.
Yeah,
but Andy Richter is... go out and get that. I'm going to...
Yeah, go buy
yet.
Andy Richter. You have to order it. They're not going to have it at your local Walmart because Walmart's a piece of stupid people.
Okay.
They didn't even get Howard the Duck.
I know. Howard the Duck. Well, speaking of a movie that needs to be put on DVD...
Can we just take a moment? Can we just have a moment where we
the movie
thank
we're about to talk about
Howard the Duck,
is the 19 please. Is the 1982 masterpiece directed by the awesome Hal Needham. This film is
starring
Barry Boswick. This movie
he's the boss on Sin City, and he's also in Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's him and he and Susan Sarandon are the couple, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen all of it.
So
I don't like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, anyway, it's not about that. Okay, well, this
it's not
movie
about Rocky
is,
Horror.
Drums. Megaforce! Megaforce!
Megaforce!
Megaforce!
Megaforce!
Megaforce!
Yeah, alright. I took notes during Megaforce.
You did.
Loser.
Okay, well, Megaforce is all about this. Let's go ahead and say. It's all about this top secret military group.
It's like a team from America.
Yeah,
who are policing the world.
Well, we'll get to that later.
Okay,
we'll get to that later. First, we gotta give a good synopsis.
It's a team of super elite people with super awesome machines, led by super awesome Barry Boswick with his super super baby blue eyes.
Okay. This movie is not available on DVD. I have a DVD copy that I made myself.
Yeah, if it's ever released on DVD, they need to include a VHS hum.
Oh, yeah.
An audio track where it's just a VHS hum from, like, a really crappy old VHS copy. Because it is really endearing. And I really love this movie because it has that going on. Like, every once in a while, it will crackle and pop. The sound will.
Yeah, it's just... It gives it personality and charm. Well, okay, well, it's all about this top secret military group that ride around in these, like, weird-ass dirt bikes and doom buggies that shoot lasers and missiles, and they fight crime. I got the DVD out because I found a box cover online that I printed off for a DVD that someone made as a joke, and it's saying how it's like a Criterion movie, and it's all this stuff.
The best quote is, well, hold on, let me find the best quote. See, some of these things, some of these quotes, I don't even know what they're talking about in the movie, because, but I do, like, see a $20 million budget pissed away on this gay caveman drivel. That's a little harsh.
They have this quote from Hal Needham on the back of this DVD that says, "If someone handed me a Fiddler on the Roof, I would not know what the fuck to do with it."
Yeah, and I think I give Hal Needham a little more credit than that. But he actually did say that, didn't he?
Yeah.
That is an actual quote. That's not bullshit.
Yeah. And
he also said women like Barry Bostwick.
Hal Needham was a stunt
coordinator.
Coordinator. And he was just a stunt man for, like, and he was a stand-in for, like, Burt Reynolds on Gunsmoke and all those tons of shows.
Was Burt Reynolds on Gunsmoke?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, I mean, he wasn't actually on Gunsmoke, but he was on a lot of those shows around the early days. He was on, like, Maverick, all those shows.
Well, and anyway, like, Hal Needham ended up directing Burt Reynolds in a lot of movies.
Well, yeah. I think it came on with Smokey and the Bandit, and I was looking for a director, and I think he suggested his Hal Needham and all this stuff, and somehow Hal Needham got involved in directing, mm-hmm. and he did Smokey and the Bandit, he did Smokey and the Bandit 2, he did Cannonball Run 2, he did Stroker Ace, he did Hooper.
Yeah, and he also did Megaforce.
Megaforce, which is about the only movie he did that didn't involve Burt Reynolds.
And it isn't on DVD, and most of the other ones are, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, Stroker Ace is, like, cheap as hell. Like, it's definitely...
You can get all of them, about all the Burt Reynolds ones.
I mean, Smokey and the Bandit's, what, $5 at Kroger?
And, like, well, I think then is all the other Hal Needhams are Warner Brothers.
And this one is...
This is Paramount.
Yeah, and it's,
And Paramount doesn't care about the movies. We already know that.
Well, this movie is oddly not released... Well, Paramount's not the worst, though. I don't think.
Yeah, but this stars Barry Boswick, which, you know, he's the mayor, the mayor and the boss on Spin City and stuff like that. He plays this lead in this action film, which is very weird because he's probably the worst choice ever to play an action boss.
Here's a note I took when I was surprisingly lucid, and this is like straight. This is what Eli was thinking when he was watching the movie. He told me to write this down. He said, "Cannot follow story. Keep staring deeply into Barry Boswick's baby blues."
I did.
You said that.
And, like, scene, he always wears some other really weird, tight spandex suit. And somehow every scene, it gets awkward and awkward and awkward when you see him on screen.
Yeah, we decided the suit wasn't part of the wardrobe department. It was a makeup. It was all, yeah. It was not wardrobe, it was makeup. And you also said, 33 minutes and 30 seconds into the movie, I wrote this down. I don't know if you knew that I wrote this down. Eli, again, removes his shirt and possibly feels people emotion that we know as lust.
I did.
For Barry Bostwick.
Mm-hmm. Barry Bostwick. Mm.
And there's a skydiving scene, and he pops a rainbow parachute.
They also have rainbows in the big final scene where all the dirt bikes have smoke.
Right.
And it's different color smokes.
You mentioned that.
Big wide shot all across the field and on the rainbow.
And I have so many quotes on here.
This movie seems like it's based on a line of toys,
mm-hmm.
but these toys do not exist. But on a similar note, There is a whole bunch of toys that came out that look exactly like the Megaforce toys, and they're actually called Megaforce.
But they have nothing to do with the movie.
It's completely unrelated to the movie.
I have lots of really good notes here. I just want to read for posterity, if that's okay.
Go for it.
There's a scene where it is Guerrera and Ace Hunter, played by Barry Boswick, are having a moment. They're in silhouette in front of a purple background. And there's a motorcycle, one of the awesome flying motorcycles, is right next to them, parked. I wrote down that the machine guns on the bike were uncomfortably phallic.
Everything in this movie is uncomfortably phallic.
Yes, this movie... And then I just wrote down, if that's not a hologram, dot, dot, dot. I think that line comes back a couple times.
Yeah.
I know at the end they say, if that's not a hologram, then we're in trouble or something like that, because there's a bunch of tanks. Also, they give a guided tour in a cart.
Yeah.
And I wrote down guided tour, and then I drew an arrow to two movies that have referenced this specifically. One is Austin Powers.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is Speed Racer, where they give the guided tour of the racing facility.
Yeah, well, they also did that in Jurassic Park. They didn't.
No, Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park is different. They're different. No, Austin Powers has the exact same cart, and Speed Racer, like, Austin Powers is definitely from this.
And no,
Speed Racer is a little different.
They also did that in the Bond movies too, the little tour.
Not like this. Not Austin Powers has the exact same cart, and then he gets it stuck. Remember, he's like backing into the wall, you know. That's straight out of, like, that cart. It's yellow in Austin Powers.
Well, the only thing that actually was that the two people who are huge Megaforce fans and aren't afraid to admit to it is Matt Stone and Trey Parker.
Aren't afraid to admit to it. They made a Megaforce fan movie. They made a sequel.
Yeah. First it starts off on the season 2 DVD of
South Park.
South Park, on one of the episodes, I forget which one, but they. Because on the first two seasons...
It's on YouTube if you search a certain keyword, right.
Well, in the first two seasons, they had, like, these, like, video intros to each episode, which I kind of wish they still did, but they stopped doing it.
Yeah, I'm kind of upset they abandoned them, because my brother got the first two seasons, and I really loved those, and then I didn't realize they abandoned them after that.
And, on the second one, they have one where they're like, entertaining, like, senior citizens. And then they have one where, Trey Parker's talking about what this episode's all about, and he describes the plot for Megaforce.
Which is not easy to do.
And Matt Stone's like, no, dude, that's Megaforce. She's like, really? Like, yeah, you described the movie Megaforce. And he's like, oh, that movie's awesome. We should have made that.
And then they did!
Yeah, then they did. Because Team America World Police is pretty much Megaforce with puppets.
It's pretty, and it's pretty incredible.
But they don't have the awesome costumes.
No, but they had the homoeroticism, and they have the...
Like, the insane, like...
The insane weapons
stunts.
And stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
They don't... Well, the insane... Okay, the costumes... Here's the notes I took on the costumes. Other than that the suit is not a part of the wardrobe, it's makeup. And probably applied with spiricum, which is, like, used to, like... I don't know, put on facial appliances.
It's gum for the spirit.
Yeah. There's, I called it... where did I put it on it? Yeah, I was like, Megaforce uniform, and then I drew an arrow to feasibility of neckerchief, more aerodynamic, because the actual, like, the off-duty uniform is a neckerchief and, like, a jacket and stuff, and then there's, what are you laughing at?
He also wrote Barry Boswick. I think it's a speed suit.
Oh, yeah, I think it's, that's a Venture Brothers joke. And then the
better sci-fi, or better skydive effect than Bucket List?
Yes, because...
Helmet cannot contain Boswick's mame.
Yeah, that's... Barry Boswick has some hair in this
purple
movie.
Purple equals passion.
Yeah, remember they're in silhouette against... I mentioned that. I didn't actually say purple equals passion.
Pig not funny.
Yeah, they had these holographic topographical maps that they used to plan out their missions, and then after one of them, this British guy who's investigating them or something, he says, "That's the best hologram I've ever seen." And then this like pig cartoon comes up, and they clearly couldn't use Porky Pig because they had the music from like the Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes, but then it's a completely different, like, it's like a southern, goofy pig. I don't know.
Well, the actual story to this movie is kind of hard to follow because it really isn't there. All this is just, like, when you first see Megaforce, first you see these two, like, government people, which don't believe this Megaforce thing exists, and then they have to go, like, somehow.
They get picked up by this cowboy.
Yeah, and they think it's, like, this shady stuff going on. Then all of a sudden, here comes Megaforce on their dirt bikes. Shooting watermelons with missiles.
Oh my god! Yeah, when that happened, I was like, I cannot believe what I was seeing. These guys popping up
Willie on their dirt bike, shooting missiles at these watermelons.
Machine guns and missiles in the air. And they're blowing up all these machine guns and missiles. And I looked at Eli. I was like, "Are they under attack?" And he was like, "I don't know," because this is the first time you'd seen it the whole way through.
I've seen pieces of it several times.
And this is, I'd seen the beginning, and I'd seen the picture from the end that you used. But
the action sequence is like everything looks like toys. It really does.
Yeah, I've said that like some movies are like they have action sequences where it feels like I'm playing with toys, and I've used it as a compliment for something like The Road Warrior.
Yeah.
And then I've used it as almost a detriment, or a bit of a compliment to something like Van Helsing, where the guy, you know, it's, I forget his name, the actor who's in There Will Be Blood, he's in, like, The Mummy and all those, and he falls off the bridge, and he stays in his action figure pose as he falls, so he doesn't move. He plays Igor in the movie, and I was like, you know, that's very, you know, very much like playing with toys, just being ridiculous, and, you know, you're a kid. This movie's like a child wrote the plot, a child, you know, made the costumes, a child, you know, made all the, like, everything, you know, everything that's in the movie was written by a child playing with these toys.
But directed by an adult. Because
directed by a man with bigger balls than you'll ever have.
Yeah. And it's like, this movie is so completely insane and awesome in every way. And it's like, on the website, I always have this image, like, when I'd write a blog, all but the last one. Was like, I would put like this away message, which is Barry Boswick on a motorcycle waving goodbye, flying in the air.
In case you're wondering what that's from, it's from Megaforce.
Yes, it's from Megaforce.
And do you want to let him guess what the new one's from? Or did we already mention it in this episode? Yeah, or was that earlier when I told you? Yeah, it's Mannequin 2.
Yeah, it's this one. It was Mannequin 2 on the Move.
I could remember if I just yelled that at you, like out of anger for something else. No, I was like, it's Mannequin 2!
Well, because when I talk about Herman's Head, you mentioned Mannequin
2. Okay.
Recap the previous on the episode!
Alright. Well, speaking of recapping the previous, we're coming...
Okay,
like,
well, Megaforce...
Pretty close to the end.
Like, it kind of loses steam through, like, near the end, because, like, it's so awesome. And then when they get the big action sequence, it's still pretty cool, but what truly makes this movie so memorable was that after they're... You don't really know if they're defeating the bad guy or not, but after they're all getting inside the airplane to fly away, all but like Ace Hunter, which is Barry Boswick, he's left behind and he gets on his motorcycles and he drives off.
Sit down. I'm gonna cover my pants. Sit down.
Okay. And he gets on his motorcycle and he's trying to catch up to the plane. And all of a sudden, he hits these buttons on his dirt bike and like these wings
which
sprout out.
One, and then he says, "Yeah," he says, "one," and the wings sprout out.
Yeah, and then like these rockets shoot off, and he starts to fly in the air, and he flies onto the motorcycle. And this is after he says the greatest line in the history of cinema. He's like, he comes up to the bad guy right before he flies off on his motorcycle.
Yes.
He's like, "Hey, the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
And then he flies off. Yeah, and then him and his girl Guerrera, they do this, they kiss the thumb, and then they give a thumbs up. And they do that a couple times in the movie, and it shows that they're meant for each other. And, the ending is, orgasm-inducing.
Yeah, this is so insane and so over the... I really want to see... There's actually some really good-looking sequences in there that I really like to see in, like, widescreen
I would
stuff.
Like to see a DVD... Like, we were joking earlier. I said it's going to go straight to Blu-ray. I don't want to be joking there. I want it to come out on Blu-ray. If it comes out on Blu-ray, I will buy a Blu-ray player. I will apply for another credit card, and I will take out a bank loan to buy an HDTV and a Blu-ray player if this ever comes out on Blu-ray. I hope someone's listening. You know, like, they can make this happen. Because it's worth every penny. Because it's Megaforce.
I just want to play with... I just want to get the action figures and... This did spawn a computer game.
And an Atari game.
An Atari 2600 game. They talked about making a game for this for Xbox 360s and Xbox Live. That's something you download.
But there are a bunch of pussies who just fucking pussed out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get a copy of this movie... You can look on eBay. I had a VHS copy I got in a video store that I was closing down. But, like, you can probably download it on somewhere. But you can easily just YouTube Megaforce and watch all the best scenes.
Yeah.
Because story-wise, there's really no story. It's just weirdness, insane, retardedness, dirt bikes, shooting watermelons with lasers. Yeah, there's lasers in this, too.
A lot of the machines fire lasers. I'm going to cry because it's too pure.
This movie's too purely
masculine.
What is something I shouted with the lasers? I'm like, what man doesn't get a hard-on around a laser lies?
And you said, you said this movie would be a lot like you said the new G.I. Joe movie was going to be this movie.
Yeah, well, the new G.I. Joe movie, the story is, like, G.I. Joe is, like, it's all about this, super secret, military force.
Right.
And it's, and they described the plot, and I remember reading a review of, like, someone was talking about what this movie was about, and they said it's Megaforce.
And then I said, like, G.I. Joe might be similar to this, but it will never make my nipples this hard.
Sure.
And I think we should end on that note.
Yeah, I think we should. But Megaforce is one of the greatest movies cinema ever had to offer.
And it's Hal Needham's crowning achievement as far as I've seen.
Oh, Cannonball Run 2 is so awesome.
Well, I'll have to see it. All
of his movies are so fucking sweet, but none of them are like amazing masterpieces. They're all kind of like... Burt Reynolds' awesomeness. Burt Reynolds' finest is with Hal Needham.
Well, granted, is Bostwick's.
Yeah, and I think he did some amazing work, like Burt Reynolds has, like, outside of Hal Needham. But that's more of his serious stuff.
Right.
But his true Burt Reynolds stuff, like, when he always had a mustache and...
With the baby tigers naked.
I've seen that.
We really got to go because it's going to cut off if we don't quit soon. So, we love you for listening. I am Andrew Ford, signing off.
And I'm Eli Osman. Thank you for listening again.
If you want to watch Megaforce and you know us, call us or message us on Facebook. I am on Twitter.
I am not.
Follow me.
I don't care about Twitter.
Well, I'm Andrew
Twitter
Ford.
Twitter can kiss my ass.
Once again.